Welcome to Sports Community. You're with Jonah Veller and Steve Pallas on Sports Community Radio. Steve, how are you this morning, mate?
Joe, I'm fantastic and still relieved that they keep inviting us back, even though it is very early on a Saturday morning.
Okay, we've got a big show planned for all you guys this week. If you at any time want to engage with us, then you can email us at jointheshow@sportscommunity.com.au. So feel free to email us and feedback your comments, and we'll certainly give them a plug on the show and discuss them if there's anything that you want to talk about. Now, we've got a big show, as I did mention, Steve. We're going to talk about Snooze or David Sands.
Yeah, we'll give a bit of a wrap up to the event that we had last week to raise, which ended up raising over $100,000 for him.
Fantastic, and we've also got a very special guest from Cricket Victoria. Her name's Annie Hatley. She's the Community Programs Manager, and she's going to be talking to us all about inclusiveness and diversity and bringing in the community to your cricket club.
Yeah, exactly, Joe. I can't wait for the interview with Annie. She's passionate about what she does and very experienced. But before we get to those two discussions, Joe, there's a couple of grants that have come out this week or that are nearly closing soon. So we'll just run through those. The Australia Post Neighbourhood Community Grants are now open, and they close on April the 4th. And these are great. Australia Post offer great grants for clubs up to $10,000. So for things, for projects that improve, that link in different community members. There's also the South Australian Active Clubs program. So these are grants for South Australian clubs, Joe, and this shows is heard Australia wide around via our podcast. So that's why we pick up all the Australia-wide grants. So the Active Club program helps provide assistance to active recreation and sports clubs with programs and equipment of up to $5,000. That one's closing on April the 14th, so there's still a little bit of time. And a really popular one that's still open but is closing very, very quickly on March the 14th is the Commonwealth Bank Community Grants Program. So there's three grants that are either opening or nearing closing this week, and you can see all the grants on the Sports Community website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, Joe.
Okay, so make sure you go and visit our webpage if you want to check out the latest details and grants that are rapidly closing or have become available. Okay, you're with Joe and Steve here on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula, on Sports Community Radio, and we're going to talk about a fantastic event that happened last week, and it was to raise some money for our friend David Sands, and it was an amazing weekend, wasn't it, Steve?
Yeah, it really was, Joe, and we'd had, the lead-up to the event on our show a couple of weeks prior to the background of David and him catching meningitis and I guess the community's response to that. On the weekend just gone, cut to the end of the chase, we managed to raise just over $100,000 for his recovery.
That's amazing. Now, walk us through it. It was made up of two components. One was an auction night, which was held at the where was the Peninsula Sports Centre?
Peninsula Theatre. Peninsula Theatre. Just next door to the radio station.
Right.
Jay.
And the second component was a T20 celebrity cricket match, which managed to attract the likes of Gary Lyon, no less. So the auction night, how many auction items were involved in this particular auction night?
Well, as it ended up, it was an amazing night from the amount, just the huge amount of donations that we received from the community. Even on the night, Joe, there was auction items coming in. So we had just under 30 loud auction items with two auctioneers. One of them was Dennis Matthews, who's a professional auctioneer from Grays Online. And another one was Mark Fine from the SEN radio station here in Melbourne. So together they auctioned off just under 30 items. As diverse as holidays to Hamilton Island, a 10% share in a racehorse, and Mornington being a racing town, we were able to leverage off the people in the community there. But as money can't buy sort of prizes like a walkthrough of the block, the Channel 9 block.
Amazing.
TV show, the day before the public gets to see it.
That's great. And what numbers are we talking about coming through the door?
Oh, well, just before we talk about the numbers, Joe, it wasn't just the loud auctions. We ended up having 70 silent auctions from just made up of contributions from the community shops. And we also had a major raffle on the night, which had 35 different prizes. So all up over 200 businesses, large and small, contributed to the night. And just before we move off, the amazing support of the businesses, Joe, it wasn't just the auction prizes and the giveaways. Just about everything from the food and drink perspective was donated as well, which was just a phenomenal effort from people that really cared about David. So, yeah. But so from the night, we had just under 400 people come through the doors on the Saturday night auction.
That's amazing. That is unbelievable. And testament to the fella. I mean, he was out and about on that night, wasn't he?
Well, I think one of the things that we spoke about in the first time when we had the boys, a lot of the guys from the organising committee in on the show, Joe, was that it had become something for him to focus on and something that was helping in his recovery. So I vividly remember I was there an hour or so earlier than people started coming in the doors and just setting up all the computers for bidder and auction registration. And so no one was walking in or anything, and he just walked in. Yeah, and I hadn't seen him do that unaided. Like, he was just by himself. No one else was in the foyer. I just stood up and clapped. Yeah, and so amazing. For me, that just there was
this event was amazing on many different levels. It really goes to show the power of community. Mornington is and Mount Martha. David Sands was a massive part of the Mount Martha Cricket Club, as well as the Somerville Tennis Club.
Yeah, Somerville, and his young boy goes to the Somerville Primary School. So there was lots of community.
So yeah, the community came together, and it just shows the power of the community to come together for a cause and to enrich the life of others in the community. I mean, it was an amazing effort by all and sundry. Now, I was there in the afternoon just helping out, and my contribution was relatively small compared to a number of others. Just maybe, mate, if there's a few names you'd like to just read out that you'd like to thank, some of the key contributors there.
Oh, I mean, well, there's almost too many, but I think rather than the people that put a lot of time in, I think the success of the event actually came from so many people giving a little bit of their time, whether it be in the lead up to the events, whether it be helping get auction items or prizes, or whether it be helping on the night, so many people walked up on both the events, and we haven't yet spoken about the T20 game, Joe, where we had somewhere between 500 and 1,000 people, maybe around the 800 mark is my guess. People were just continually walking up and saying, "What can we do? Well, how can we help? How can we help put on the day, put on the event?" And that was just amazing. But yeah, there was some fantastic supporters of the event. Apart from the sporting clubs, the Mount Martha Cricket Club, the Mornington Cricket Club, really the whole cricketing community came out in support of one of their own. As we've mentioned, the Somerville Tennis Club. Schools, St. McCartan's schools and schools around the area really got behind it. But both David and his father have a long history of working in the hospitality sector as well. And so the hospitality sector, Joe, got right behind it. And I guess first and foremost is Ian Chapman from the Melbourne Racing Club, who was really so instrumental in helping us not just with practical things like food and acquiring the alcohol, but really, really minute detail like helping you keep it cold or helping us get security for the night. He also was able to get some auction prizes, so marquees at the Caulfield Cup was very, very popular. So it really was a fantastic illustration of what can happen when the community feels fully engaged in something that they believe in. And it, in this instance, it was an individual, but it can so easily be a club or a cause or a purpose, and we see that all the time.
Yeah, I think you need to acknowledge the work of the committee that was behind this. So guys like Jason Mathers and Chris Holcomb, Mick Diverston and his family were incredible, and David Sands' father, of course, Kenny, who's been the rock of Gibraltar for his son. For those of you out there who are unaware, David suffered from meningitis and was at one point told, well, his family was told that they should let him go. And he's been able to fight back, even though he's had five strokes in the during that recovery process. And the function on the weekend was to raise funds for him so he can continue his rehabilitation outside of the public funded sector. And you know, there's probably hundreds of people that we're not going to be able to mention. I saw the likes of Ed, Kate Singstock, all these people that were there. Yourself, Steve, have spent a massive amount of time on this.
Other members of the organising committee.
Yeah, and all these people. So to all those folks that were involved in this, it was an amazing effort and an illustration to the world, really, how a community can come together and make the life of a particular community member a hell of a lot more easier. So well done to everyone, and a big thanks too to the celebrities that you were able to get down, because they were huge, Mark Fine and Gary Lyon and these guys.
Yeah, well, just before we move off, I guess, the organising committee, which we've named half of them, Joe, so we better name the other half. Anthony Gapes from Australia Post, which is another big community that Snooze, or David Sands, or Snooze as we know him, was a part of. Mick Wunderly, you've mentioned, but Mike Ronke, who was the president of, or is the president of the Mount Martha Cricket Club, Andrew Brown, who played many premierships with Snooze. And so I've just reeled off all males. We were held together by our project manager, Angie Baker, who had a very challenging time keeping many of our meetings on track. And also the ladies from the Somerville Tennis Club came to the meetings as and when they were able to. So I think one of the strengths of the events, or what one of the reasons why they were so successful, is because of the people that were on the committee. They had different skill sets, and they just did what they said they were going to do, which was amazing. Yeah, but going to the T20, Joe, like, I guess one of the reasons that we did the T20, we did two events, and as we've talked about, the auction night, but the T20 was, it had a number of reasons we went down the T20 path as well. We had a lot of access to cricketers through both the local cricket community, but also because a number of the organising committee worked for Cricket Victoria, and so we were able to attract, go directly to the state cricketers. That weren't particularly those that weren't playing for Victoria on that particular weekend. So they all embraced the competition. So people like Will Sheridan and Jade Herricks, and really high quality cricketers like that. We also had the other tremendous advantage, I guess, is that one of the, wasn't on the organising committee, but someone that helped so much was Jason Jacoby, who works, has a very senior position within Puma, and so he was also able to contact people and attract celebrities to the cricket game, as well as providing all the uniforms that looked fantastic on the day. So it was an amazing event, and to see, tickets were $5 for adults, and kids were free as long as you promised to take them home. So there was probably, I don't know, two-thirds of the crowd were kids, all on around the boundary line waiting for the ball to come and and come towards their direction. So a lot of us organisers, we were cringing, but at the same time, it was fantastic to see. And Snooze, again, backed up that day and was effectively spent all his time walking around the crowd, talking to people, playing with the kids and getting involved with the celebrities and the crickets. So, again, it was fantastic for the community to be able to come and see him and see how he progressed since those days where he was told to turn the machine off.
So to all and sundry, those who contributed prizes, sponsors, those on the organising committee, all of those that helped out on the day, family members, and to the people who supported it in supported the auction night and the T20 in their droves that come along and paid their money, a big thank you to everyone for making the event such a success. And some of those key numbers, mate. $80,000 raised on the auction night, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, overall the two events raised just under $100,000. I think it was, we had about 15,000-odd, 20,000-odd for the T20 game. I think maybe in the 60,000-70,000 for, or maybe not quite that high for the auction night. But the other thing, Joe, we didn't anticipate was the sheer volume of donations that we got. People would, when they're walking in the door to go to the T20 cricket game, would pay, we'd ask for $5 and they give 50 and keep the change. And we had a number of financial donations of significant in the thousands and thousands of dollars from different people before the event to help us put on the event. And so, yeah, there was a combination of donations, the auction night and the T20, which together came to an amazing total of over $100,000. But when we look back at it, the people that came together to put that together, as I said, there was probably over 200 businesses, but I also think there would be well over 100 volunteers at different stages through either the planning, running the events, and then the cleanup and the pack up of the events, and even in the post wrap up of it all, and dealing with councils and those sorts of things. I think that there will be well over 120, 130 people involved in the actual running the events, which is again another reason why I was a bit loath or hesitant to name specific people, because there's just so many people involved, and we simply don't have time to thank them all, but that was one of the strengths. So great event, Joe.
Annie's Manufacturing Jewelers offer custom-made jewelry, handmade to your specifications and designed to suit your lifestyle. Inspect Annie's exquisite collections of jewelry and watches on display in-store. From traditional ranges to contemporary and European designs, Annie's offer designing and remodelling, cleaning and repair work, insurance claims. Come visit Annie's at 92 Yonge Street, corner Well Street, Frankston. Phone 9783 6226. Visit online www.annies.com.au. Annie's Manufacturing Jewellers. You imagine, we create.
If you're sick of pokies and plastic pubs, try the Heritage Tavern at Balnowring. A quaint, comfortable 1930s house on 2 acres of gardens with great live music every Sunday. It's even family friendly. And of course they do functions, from casual to weddings. But that's not the best bit. It's the quality meals at great prices every day. Not to mention a great range of local wine, local beer and local cider. Head down to the Heritage Tavern in Balnowring. It's about as local as you can get.
Station sponsor.
Denor Homewares Mornington for your kitchen and dining requirements. Denor Homewares are major stockers of leading brands including Maxwell & Williams, KitchenAid, Rayco, Scampan, Bodum and many others. Need a gadget, appliance, updating or starting your kitchen? With free gift wrapping, a genuine loyalty program and senior discounts, Denor Homewares is for you. Shop 3, 26 McLaren Place, opposite Centro. Call us on 59 768868. Denor Homewares Mornington, our station sponsor.
Peninsula Skin Cancer Centre has two centrally located clinics in Mornington and now in Frankston. They not only have state-of-the-art facilities, but also a great team of specialists with great skill in surgical technique and non-invasive skin cancer treatment. See for yourself on their open day, 15th of March, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at their new centre, 375 Nepean Highway, Frankston. Inquiries call 5975 9544. The Peninsula Skin Cancer Centre's a station sponsor.
Are you a business owner looking to cut costs in your business? Tough, isn't it? Let Bartercard show you a different way to increase your sales, cash flow and business profits. Don't wait. Increase your cash flow today. Boost your business with Bartercard. To find out how Bartercard can increase cash flow to your business, call 1300-BARTER. That's 1300-BARTER.
Wherever 4x4 Accessories is a family-owned business who pride themselves on great service and great products. Wherever 4x4 Accessories specialise in camping gear, RV accessories and lots more. So pop by and say hi to the Wherever team at 5 Brett Drive, Carrum Downs, or visit them online at wherever4x4accessories.com.au. For more, call 9708-2226. Wherever 4x4 Accessories. Where are you going? Wherever. A station sponsor.
Okay, a big welcome to our next guest, Annie Hatley, Community Programs Manager at Cricket Victoria. Welcome to Sports Community Radio, Annie.
Thanks, Joe.
Hello, Annie. Steve Pellis, how are you going?
Good, Steve. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks. Now, you must be very busy in the lead up to Harmony Day.
Yes, we are. We're working through the end of cricket season, and while there's not a lot of international cricket happening in Australia, or domestic cricket for that matter, there's plenty going on in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to, before we talk about Harmony Day, can you just give us a little bit of a description about your role with Cricket Victoria?
Yeah, so I'm across a lot of different programs, and we look specifically at the philosophy of harmony in cricket, which is a Cricket Victoria philosophy that cricket's a game for everyone, regardless of religion, background, gender, age, ability, sexuality. So we want cricket to be a game for everyone. And my role specifically looks at breaking down barriers for international, disability, multicultural and any communities living in disadvantage to access cricket.
Wow, that's a huge portfolio. How long have you been in the role? You've been in the role for quite a while now.
Yeah, I've been with Cricket Victoria for just over 7 years, working specifically on community programs.
Okay, so what programs have you got? Has Cricket Victoria got at the moment?
Yeah, so if we look at, say, the Indigenous program, we do targeted programs, and the program's actually called Noongal Taonga Tani. It's named by Indigenous people for Indigenous people.
Yep.
And we do development squads, entry-level participation, talent identification. We work with people with a disability. We work with the Melbourne Deaf Cricket Club, Victorian Blind Cricket Association. We have carnivals, statewide carnivals for people with physical and intellectual impairments. And if we're looking at, say, our female programs, well, we're not saying females a disadvantage. It is a non-traditional game, I suppose, for females to access, and so we try to tackle some barriers to getting more women involved in cricket.
So let's start with the lady cricketers, because that's a really strong area for clubs that are going down that path. What have been some of the traditional barriers that have stopped females from playing cricket?
Yeah, I suppose the hardest one for young women is trying to find a female team. And I know, you know, that women's cricket has been around for a very long time. But, you know, we have over 1,000 cricket clubs in Victoria. And while you might approach your local club and there's not a women's cricket team, there might be a women's cricket team in the area somewhere. So, you know, I even remember myself as a kid growing up loving the game, but rarely coming across any other girls to play cricket with. If I wanted to play cricket, I had to play with all the boys. So that, I would say, that's probably one of the biggest entry barriers for girls wanting to be able to play with another group of girls.
So how is the growth of female cricket being driven? Is it being driven by girls coming together and forming teams, or is it being driven by the more traditional male clubs recognising that they should be... their membership base should be more reflective of the community and clubs going down that path and creating the teams for women and girls?
Yeah, I suppose there's two avenues where we've really been pushing it. One's through schools cricket. We get terrific take-up of girls playing schools cricket through our national programs and across our Victorian statewide programs. And then the other avenue is through club cricket. And we really want our clubs to, if a girl does approach them, help them find that avenue. So maybe helping them have some confidence to work into, say, a boys' team or develop a mixed team or to help find enough girls to start a girls' team. And there's a lot of different models around Victoria that work really well. I know one of the first ones I looked at was up in Ballarat. We heard about girls' teams playing in boys' division. So taking a bunch of girls from around, say, Ballarat, pulling them into one team, but they still played amongst the boys, but at least they got to play with the girls in a team together.
Yeah, absolutely. We, as you know, we do a lot of training around, well, not just Victoria, but around the country. And one of the frustrating barriers that we see, and it's not a cricket thing, it's a whole of sport, is that there's a whole range of traditionalists that don't believe that their sport needs to change and progress and expand, and what they've done for a long period of time satisfies their needs. So for clubs, why should clubs consider opening up their and embracing these, well, we'll stay with the ladies for a moment, but embracing a new group? It would be a lot of work for a club, and a number of volunteers that just spring to my mind would not want to do that sort of work. So how do you overcome those sorts of barriers?
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit of a sales pitch sometimes, trying to convince people to open their doors to diversity. And, you know, if you're talking women specifically, well, you know, there's so many women that can bring value into a club, whether it's, you know, managing junior teams. You know, there are plenty of women out there who are very good at whipping a group of young boys and girls into order. So they'd be great coaches and great team managers of junior cricket. You know, a lot of women with professional skills that could help on clubs, executives and committees, whether it's, you know, being treasurers or presidents or secretaries. So, you know, bringing more women into club cricket, not necessarily just as a player, but also as coaches, volunteers, scorers, you know, it just adds a bigger support network to clubs trying to run themselves. And one of the biggest issues we hear, not just in cricket but in the sports community, is that people don't have time. Running a sporting club's like running a business. There's so much legislation, there's so much requirement from working with children and, you know, privacy around collecting people's details. It's probably not as simple as it used to be. And letting more people into your club brings in more skills and more helpers.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no way known is it anywhere as easy as it used to be. From an observer looking in, it looks like that some clubs are going to have to deal with this issue anyway, because there's so many young girls are playing in what was the old Milo cricket set up, and in those introductory programs for the sport. And so the clubs are having, you know, almost some of the ones that I've seen have got almost 50% of the participants being girls, so that they want to continue within the sport.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, for a girl, it can be very intimidating walking into a club that might maybe traditionally be very male dominated. So for a young girl to walk into a club and, you know, not have any role models, that can be intimidating. It can potentially scare people out of the sport. So, you know, we hope that clubs are actually building welcoming environments where, you know, you don't necessarily have to have 50-50 male, female, but at least maybe addressing some of the issues, like, you know, simple things like girls like clean toilets. I know, you know, we always, when we run functions, we make sure the toilets are clean for both the boys and girls. It might be wearing comfortable uniforms or having, you know, a kit like pads and gloves and helmets that actually fit the girls. So there's so many little things that can be done to make a female feel comfortable in what might traditionally be a male-dominated environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, if we can just flick over to, I guess, coming at it from a completely different angle, and one of the things we've realised working in the training is that clubs, the communities surrounding clubs, many of them, the profile of the community and the nationalities that make up the community have changed have changed significantly and in some cases rapidly. And clubs, some of the clubs or many clubs, actually don't know how to respond to that. So they know they need to engage with the newer members of the community, but different nationalities. But they don't know how to do that. So how does Cricket Victoria approach that very big and wide challenge, and huge opportunity? Yep.
Yeah, well, I suppose when a lot of people come to us, they're asking that same question. We want our club to reflect the community, but how do we do that? And that's where a lot of our staff have experience of knowing what other clubs are doing, having spoken to a lot of volunteers and clubs throughout Victoria or even throughout the world. It's where we've got the network. So we have relationships with so many community organisations such as Refugee and Asylum Settlement Services, AIMS, Red Cross, Life Without Barriers. We work with respite and recreation services for people with disability. We work with the Lord's Taverners, who are cricket enthusiasts who try to break down barriers. We work with, you know, female support organisations. So we've got this huge network of community organisations that realise the power of sport, and we like to put them in touch with their local cricket club. So they could work together, not on just getting people involved in cricket, but making the community a better place to live and improving social connectedness amongst the community.
Yep.
And there are a lot of stories through cricket clubs, and I don't know that, you know, cricket clubs get a huge amount of credit for what they do, but, you know, I could list about five clubs that I know this season that have embraced refugee and multicultural groups, a lot of new arrival communities. And out of that, they've seen their club cultures changing. Suddenly, you know, the Thursday night barbecues are becoming curry nights, and there are people from different diversities coming into the club. And that you see change, and you see the club becoming richer for knowing their community.
Oh, absolutely. So do you think that where a club has made that decision that they want to connect with parts of the community, that particularly in cricket's specifically, that they should contact, is it their regional manager, or should they contact Cricket Victoria or go directly to those communities themselves? Is that how would you recommend for a club to make, once they've made that decision that they want to proactively engage different community groups?
Yep, I'd recommend all three networks. I know there are a lot of professionals that work in different industries that have access to so many community networks that, you know, they would have the confidence and the knowledge and the networks to be able to approach a certain community themselves. For people who may not have those networks or the confidence to do that, then the regional cricket managers or Cricket Victoria's head office staff can certainly assist. As an example, I've got three people that work with me and have a lot of connections through Indigenous affairs, through disability and respite and recreation care services. So, you know, if they're saying, okay, you know, at our club, we want to get more of those Sri Lankan refugees that we're seeing in the community to come down, well, we'll have people who can connect them to maybe a local settlement service or a local education service.
Yep.
And the beauty of, you know, accessing some of those networks through Cricket Victoria is we're also very aware of some of the resources that come with.
Yes.
Sometimes it can be quite stressful. There are language barriers. There are extra costs involved. There are often low socioeconomic communities that can't afford the costs of playing club sport and the equipment. And that's where some of these additional networks and services have some funding to assist.
Annie, it's Joe Novella here. Cricket is... Do you find that you have to modify the game in some way or repackage it or you know, maybe have some different equipment to attract some of these different sections of the community?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, no one ever really gets involved in cricket playing it in its purest format with whites and pads and gloves and helmet and, you know, a hard red ball the first time. You know, if you just, you know, for the people listening, reflect about the first time you picked up a bat or ball. It might have been in the backyard, at the beach, you know, in a street, at school. And chances are you probably weren't facing a nice, shiny, hard red ball that first time either. So, You know, when we go out to the community and we're teaching someone to play cricket and running a clinic or a carnival, we're not going out with that equipment. We're going out with modified equipment, modified game. You know, sometimes we've worked with kids who they barely speak English. They've just arrived in Australia and they've never seen a cricket bat. They don't know which end to hold it, whether the roof is up, the flat face is up. So we do take it right back to the absolute basics.
What's the key? I mean, this would be gold for any other sporting association out there that's trying to do this, and there's plenty of them trying to build a wider audience. Is the key when you're repackaging the games? What do you focus on? Do you focus on it being the simplicity of it? So, like you said, stripping back, or do you focus on it being fun? Or how do you remodel the games? What's your focus?
Yeah, well, it's something we constantly talk about, and ultimately we want people to be having a good time, so we do talk fun. You know, we've used other sporting equipment. We've used tennis rackets to hit classic catches at the beach. We've used, you know, soccer balls. We've used other sports equipment. But we just want kids having a fun, and we want them to associate fun with cricket. We want them to associate all the things that, you know, we know. As Australians growing up, the cricket is, it's summer, it's fun, it can be played anywhere, it can be modified. You can pick up a ruler in a classroom with a scrunched up piece of paper and play cricket, or you can pick up a stick in the backyard, or you can turn a baseball bat into a cricket bat. But, you know, we want to equip people with having a great time and knowing that they can play anywhere and they can modify it anywhere themselves.
I think one of the things that Australians are very proud of is that cricket is their national sport. And, you know, it's often said that the second most powerful job in Australia is the captain of the cricket team. Now, I would imagine there is some obstacles to changing the culture so that people are more open to other people from different communities coming into cricket clubs. Have you found that? And what kind of things do you advocate to overcome that?
Yeah, it has been a barrier, and I know it's something that we've faced at Cricket Victoria as well. You know, change takes time. It requires behavioural change. But I have to say, you know, through all of my time, every time I've approached a local club or a local volunteer and said, you know, we're working with an Indigenous community or a community or group of kids with a disability, can we welcome them into your club? Australians and Victorians are such good people. They are very open to welcoming people of all different backgrounds through their doors. So when you approach a club person, we never come across a club person that says, oh, no, I don't want to do that. But what we do get is, oh, how much is this going to cost? Mm. How much time is it going to take?
Yep.
So there are barriers to making things happen, but I never come across someone who says that they don't want more people involved in their club.
And there's lots of examples. As you said, you've been working with some groups for over 7 years. So do you want to just take us through some of the different clubs? And the one that sticks out to me is Elwood Cricket Club, because that would, for me, when I think about Elwood, and for our listeners that aren't in Melbourne, Elwood's an affluent, leafy, bayside suburb. And their work with refugees, it's...
Yeah, and it goes back to, you know, knowing that if you're bringing in different skill sets into your club, that actually is enriching of your club, because there's a guy out at Elwood Cricket Club called Rick, who is a professional working with settlement of asylum seekers. And, you know, Rick approached us with his club president and said, look, we're getting a lot of Sri Lankans, Pakistanis, Bangladesh cricketers that we'd love to engage in our club, but we've got issues that they can't afford the membership, they can't afford the equipment. So we spoke with the club and we worked with helping them address some of those cost issues.
Annie, to cut you off. This is a challenge that all clubs face regardless. So how did you go about doing that? How did you help them address those cost issues?
Yeah, well, we actually sat down in a cafe one day with the local council, the regional cricket manager, a couple of members from the club and myself, and we had some conversations around what the club wanted to do, why they were doing it.
Yes.
And really, part of it was they wanted to do it as a community service. They wanted to give back to the community. But the other thing is, you know, they wanted to generate a new group of members into their club and start to reflect their community. And, you know, from there we had council pitching in suggestions and providing support in a different way as Cricket Victoria. We've helped them with a little bit of funding, some publicity, things like a bush range is about to auction to help them raise more money.
Yep.
Some gifts for the people that put in the extra hard yards at the cricket club to make them feel welcome as well. So bringing more people around the table has actually just generated a lot of support for them.
And when you just mentioned council before, which is just a critical partner in local sport, I'm assuming that the council team staff members that you got involved weren't the traditional sport and rec members that we're used to dealing with, but other parts of council, community engagement maybe, or was it the sports guys that you had around the table?
Yeah, it was actually the sports guys, so the recreation department officers. And I think, you know, recreation officers are well across clubs being welcoming and inclusive environments. It's something that we get from the Australian Sports Commission, Victorian Government, all the way through to local council, supporting those messages because, again, at all levels, people realise that the power of community sport can address, you know, so many health issues as well and social engagement issues.
Oh, absolutely. Sport's the best preventative medicine of all time. I continually tell my father and my mother who think that money should be going towards more health and arts and stuff like that. Now, just changing tact a little bit, tell us a little bit about Harmony Day, which is coming up.
Yeah, so Harmony Day is a national celebration of diversity in Australia. And I know the federal government right through to local community organisations really get involved in celebrating diversity of your workplace, your school, your local club, your local community. So people register events all across Australia to celebrate that particular day. And given that we have a philosophy of harmony in cricket, it makes sense that we celebrate it. It's within cricket season for those who are still playing at that time of the year.
Yeah.
But we do encourage cricket clubs to run their own harmony celebration, so to celebrate the diversity that they have within their clubs. And it doesn't just have to be about multiculturalism. It can be about, you know, having different people from all walks of life. We know that some clubs are already running terrific events. Mount Clear Cricket Club up around Ballarat, they're running a massive backyard cricket event where they invite people of all ages to come and play, you know, a modified format in their backyard being their club. And they'll be celebrating all their local membership and encouraging people to get involved with their club.
And how can clubs get involved? And, well, first of all, I remember what date Harmony Day is because my daughter was born on that. It's the 21st of March?
That's right, 21st of March, yep.
And how can clubs get involved in that? Or is it more unstructured and that's just the day that they think about putting on these events? Or is there a more formal registration process? Or
There are formal registration processes. However, you know, we'd encourage people just to be celebrating within their local community. It doesn't mean you have to register the event there. It's just about celebrating your organisation. And you can choose that to do that any way you like. You can have multicultural foods. You can celebrate with an exhibition match, I don't know, mums versus sons or something like that. You could look to maybe just do it as a bit of a driver to get more coaches or parents involved in the club. It's really about embracing community. We're running a campaign through our Harmony in Cricket Twitter and Facebook site called 21 Gifts in 21 Days. That started on the 1st of March and it finishes on the 21st of March. Now, we've managed to bring in some merchandise and gifts from the Renegades, the Stars, from Cricket Australia and Cricket Victoria, and we're handing out gifts every day to help facilitate people celebrating that message.
So what sort of, and I just need to apologise for my on-air / off-air presenter who's been distracted by watching the cricket highlights from last night. So he's
I don't blame him.
Watching the Australian bowlers rip through the South African batting lineup. But I love the way that you use social media to get the message across and to connect different parts of your communities together and show that. So what sort of gifts have you got in the 21 days program that you've got going at the moment?
Yeah, well, the first few days we've had actually David Hussey visit a young man in hospital and provide him with a signed Melbourne Stars shirt and cap. We've been sending out some of our Harmony and Cricket cooler bags. We have some merchandise from the Bushrangers Renegade still to go, some autographed bats from the Bushrangers and Vic Spirit. So everyone's been very generous. We've got fairy wings from the Melbourne Stars. And
how are you deciding? Oh, sorry. How are you deciding the winner each day? Because this is a Twitter competition, yeah?
No, it's not a competition. We're actually just encouraging people to celebrate Harmony in cricket. And a lot of organisations that we partner with that help clubs celebrate that are being recognised through that process. So, yep. For example, the Lord's Taverners Victoria do a lot of fundraising to help local clubs and help local disability cricket programs. So we've given them a Bushrangers bat to help them do some of their fundraising.
Oh, okay.
So we're doing it as a bit of a recognition program as well. We're going to be giving a whole lot of giveaways to Mount Clear Cricket Club, for example, so they can use that on the 21st of March for their backyard cricket day.
Annie, it's Joe here again. Cricket's a very traditional game, and I know when I was playing it, there was a lot of tradition involved and a lot of things that have been done for quite a long time, like, you know, the home team supplies the Sangers with the butter and the hundreds and thousands and things like that, and Tim Tams and whatnot. Now, I would imagine that would be quite a new concept to a lot of our communities out there. How do you, as a community programs manager, balance that tradition with the need to evolve the game to make it more digestible for these groups?
Well, a lot of those traditions work really well already. So rather than change those traditions, we look at modification as well. And we have huge lists of ideas which actually come from things that clubs have already done. So there's been change and progress happening for a long time. And one example, I mean, if you look at the morning or afternoon tea or even the lunches served, we know of some cricket clubs who now they have, say, two barbecues. They have their non-halal barbecue and their halal barbecue. So while they still run their regular Thursday barbecues, it's just a modification to make it inclusive of those who can only eat halal.
That is a sensational effort and should be commended wholeheartedly. And I think a lot of other sports out there could take a few leafs out of your book. Just on the social media side of things and the marketing and social media is an enormous tool nowadays for clubs and also peak sporting bodies and federations and whatnot to improve the participation, also to grow their market. In your experience, what's worked for you in terms of how you market inclusion and diversity in the game? Do you rely on your Facebooks and your Twitters? Do you have some kind of mix? Do you do video? You know, what works for you guys?
Yeah, well, we do a combination of Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Videos worked very well, especially with Indigenous and disability programs for us. We find that when we video our participants, whether it's in a training session or at MCG or a terrific, say, club experience, and we put it online, people love seeing video footage of themselves or love seeing photos. And so putting those onto Facebook, people tend to share them across their pages, and that's when we tend to get a bit more viral interaction. We're definitely getting more people connect with us with direct messaging through, Harmony and Cricket's one philosophy that tends to resonate with a lot of people. So rather than getting contact with or see Annie Hately tweeting, they're connecting with that message of Harmony and Cricket. So that's increasing our followership and people contacting us at Cricket Victoria. And we also found that a lot of signage works as well. We've given Harmony and Cricket signage to clubs. They put it on their walls and they find people just walking past. They see the sign and they walk through the club door. So that's a very real activity. We're trying to get a lot of club stories written up in the local paper. We want the local community to be reading about the great things that their local club does as well. So really, we just want local clubs to be getting recognition for what they do in the community, because I think cricket for a long time has been seen as a white man's sport. And the truth is, if you walk into a lot of cricket clubs, they're more diverse than just a bunch of white guys sitting around playing in white uniforms.
Yeah, absolutely. What about apps? Do you know of clubs? Are the clubs making use of the new direct messaging apps like Team App and these kind of things?
Yeah, and I know there's plenty of great apps on the market. I know Cricket Australia have released My Cricket app, Team App, Crick HQ has some great facilities that you can use for scoring. Recently, we worked with the Melbourne Stars to release Learn Cricket. Learn Cricket, if you actually look at T20, it's hard to find the rules of T20 cricket online in an easy-to-use format. So the Stars thought, okay, we're trying to engage a lot of new arrivals and people that don't necessarily have strong English. So they developed an interactive app called Learn Cricket to help people understand 2020 cricket.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, the sooner that we reform the scoring books, and I think that's changed now, but I know when I was playing and I was not a very good batsman, so I'd spend a lot of time being told that I need to score, and I would run to square leg rather than do that job. So, no, I'll go and umpire, thanks. I'll leave that to someone else.
Yeah, and it's not too hard to convince some kids to sit on, an iPhone or an iPad now. So it's not as miserable as a job as it used to be.
Yeah, great.
Now, when you mentioned that there's a lot of things that you've learned over the journey, have you got that on the Cricket Victoria website, or how can cricket clubs actually access that information that Cricket Victoria's got over the journey, and yourself in particular?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I probably don't promote what I've learned along the way. I generally enjoy a lot of face-to-face and phone conversations and having those chats with people over a cup of tea or a coffee. But we do actually share a lot of the stories on Cricket Victoria's website. Every year we publish a digital book under Harmony in Cricket that collects articles and stories. There are a lot of club people that write some terrific stories about things that happen at their club, so we really push that out through a collection of articles in a Harmony Cricket magazine every year. So, you know, we'll be putting out another one in the next couple of months, and it's going to be sharing the stories of the 2014 season.
Brilliant. Annie, thank you so much for your time. You're reminding me of my childhood days of classic catches on Mount Martha Beach with my mate Brennan Diverston, and in the water and having people yell and scream at us because we took speckies, and then in the backyard. You brought back a lot of memories for me. So thank you so much for your time. It's been brilliant.
And for me, Annie, I've got to say, I'm of Italian background. And I was unusual in that I played cricket in my area when I was growing up. And there were a few barriers, I've got to tell you. But I was a strong enough kid to push through those and really enjoyed my cricket. And I'm just so glad that you as a body looking after the game has evolved it now so everyone can feel comfortable. Just superb job. Well done.
Thank you so much. And you know, I am really proud to work at Cricket Victoria. I do love working here, and I have to say we do practice what we preach. If you walk into our organisation, it's full of diversity and women, and you know, I've got Indigenous youth working for me as well, so I'm one of those lucky people that love to go to work every day and really genuinely enjoy what I do and talking about it as well. So thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, a big thank you to Annie Hately, Community Programs Manager at Cricket Victoria. Okay, we're rapidly coming to that time again, the end of the show. It's been a pleasure hosting the radio show for you out there this week. We hope that you've enjoyed it. So on behalf of myself, Joe Novella,
and myself, Steve Pellis, thank you for having us part of your sports community.